So delighted to have this opportunity to hear from you and to share some thoughts on abstinence and food plan and hope. I want to thank Leslie very much for secretarying the meeting and Karen W. for giving me guidance and asking me to speak today and also telling me what the three topics ought to be. So I think everybody here, everybody except for maybe one person was here this morning where I shared my experience, strength, and hope. So I'll just say, if you're new to this, to today's function, that I have been in Overeaters Anonymous and abstinence by the grace of a higher power I found here in the 12 steps of OA since August 3rd, 1989. My top weight was 194 pounds. I have no doubts that I could have gone much higher and still could because I'm still a compulsive overeater and my disease is progressive. And today I weigh in the 120s. The last time I weighed earlier this week, I weighed 128. So God has relieved, 65 pounds from me. So I'm forever grateful for that. So we have about 90 minutes. And here's what I was thinking. I've never done this before, this particular format, certainly never done it on Zoom. There's so much we can talk about. My thought was that I would, that we'll take this in three segments. And that I will share some things, hopefully mostly from the literature and less from my opinion, because the literature is what got me abstinent, not my opinion. Open it up. Like, we'll talk about abstinence first, and then we'll open it up and people can ask questions or, they can share whatever we want to do. And I'm watching the time, and then we'll shift over to plan of eating, and then we'll do the same thing with hope. It's a gorgeous day, apparently, everywhere in Southeast Alaska. So I guarantee you we will not go long, and maybe we can go short so that we can get you back out in that sunshine. So I'm also going to drop a couple of things in the chat that I dropped in this morning. One is just a huge list of OA-approved pamphlets and books that specifically talk about either a plan of eating or abstinence. And I will drop them in. And also, I want to just forewarn you, I have some notes that of things I want to share, but I really do want to be interactive. And I talk more, I have more things to say about abstinence than I do the other two, but that's only because it gets blurry at some points. What's abstinent and what's a plan of eating? There's very clear distinctions, but some of my sharing might get a little blurry. So this is the most I will say of the three segments. Does that sound okay if we break it up that way?
Yes.
Okay. So this is spiritual, it's physical, and it's emotional, and it's progressive, and it heals. But today, really what we're focusing on is more the physical aspect. And I'm very conscious of that because I think it's a spiritual program. So I just want to call out at the front end that Overeaters Anonymous is a spiritual program. And that, the primary purpose is to have a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps. So, put that in context. Abstinence, we're very fortunate. Abstinence is clearly defined and a food plan is clearly defined. And abstinence is our primary purpose. We have a whole book entitled Nothing But Abstinence. And years ago, OA created the current definition of abstinence, which is the action of refraining from compulsive eating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. I need to notice for myself that it says the action of, not the thinking about, because I have a disease of thinking and I can get lost in there. So it's the action of refraining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors while working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. The good news is that all eight beautiful souls who are in this meeting right now, we're abstinent in this moment, right now, we're abstinent. And if anyone is struggling, please let us help you today. Or call us or text us after the meeting. Let us help you. You're not alone anymore. Abstinence has a universal definition because I've been to meetings in different parts of the world. Whoever is absent in Greece today is in the same experience as someone in Africa, as someone in Juneau, as someone in Sacramento. Abstinence is refraining from compulsive overeating and compulsive food behaviors. It's the same for all of us. A food plan is very individual. How I abuse myself with food is different than how you did on some levels. So my food plan is probably going to be different than yours. But abstinence is the same. And, you know, Roseanne and Joe started, co-founded Overeaters Anonymous in 1961, and the word abstinence goes all the way back to 61. Then in 1973, World Service adopted the tools of recovery, the first set of tools of recovery, and abstinence was a tool. So I came in 1989. So when I joined, abstinence was a tool. We didn't have a plan of eating. So my abstinence was 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no flour, no sugar. But then in 95, World Service decided that no, abstinence is our primary purpose, took it out of the tool list, added a plan of eating, and also added an action plan as well. So sometimes, I think I can be clear when I'm sharing today, but sometimes it's easy to kind of get a little blurry on food plan versus abstinence because they didn't used to be so well defined. Best thing I know to say about abstinence is it's a heck of a lot easier than not being abstinent. I wish I understood that before I was graced with it the first day. This is so much easier than moderation. I cannot moderate certain foods. I have to abstain completely. I have to recoil as though from a hot flame because I'm a real compulsive overeater. I'm not someone who sort of has an issue with food. And I'm abstinent today because I do have a clear definition of what my food plan is. And one thing that's important for me is, you know, food plan can change over time. And in fact, because I've been graced with abstinence for so long, mine has changed. In my case, it's gotten narrower and narrower. There's less foods that I eat today than I used to eat. And frankly, some vegetables I never would have believed I've eaten that I now eat. But I don't get to change my food plan in the middle of a meal. I think that's really important. A food plan ought to be something that's established with a sponsor and the help of others, and I don't get to change it in the middle of the meal because if I do, I'm not going to be abstinent. So like in AA, you know, sobriety is their primary purpose. They don't drink no matter what. And one of my favorite tools is open AA meetings. I just love the clarity in that program, and I'm not a recovering alcoholic, but I love the clarity that I don't eat certain foods or have certain food behaviors for me that have already been defined no matter what. I have never gone to an open AA meeting and heard someone say, well, I had a beer last night, but it was my birthday and it was a light beer. You don't hear that. It's black and white. The cool thing is my black and whites can be different than somebody else's, but once I have them, I don't get to deviate from them. And this is definitely a take what you like and leave the rest. Where my food could get slippery is I often hear people talk about red light foods, yellow light foods, and green light foods. And for me, just for Wendy H. from Sacramento, my red light foods are the absolute under no circumstances I can't eat. And there's more of them, but sugar and flour are like the really obvious ones for me. Green light foods are like vegetables and fruits and lentils and beans and fish and stuff like that. Yellow light foods for me are denial. Yellow light foods are the disease going, oh, you can have this. You can have this because it's your wedding day. You can have this because you're in Europe. You can have this because whatever. Yellow light foods are just a matter of time. If I'm debating or trying to control a particular food, it is only a matter of time before I'm going to eat it and the disease is going to win. Normal people, as I understand it, and I'm not one of them, normal people do not have debates with food. They just don't. When I'm entering in a debate with the food, I'm going to lose every time. It is truly just a question of time. I am always, left to my own devices, I want to control. And controlling is not something I'm passable with certain substances. I have a mental obsession, I have a physical addiction. And there's a passage on page 33 of the big book, which I love, under more about compulsive overeating. And it says, most of us have believed that if we remained sober, remained absent for a long time, stretch, we could thereafter eat normally. We have seen the truth demonstrated again and again. Once a compulsive overeater, always a compulsive overeater. There must be no reservation of any kind, nor any lurking notion that someday he or she will be immune to certain foods. Lurking notion, you know, that for me is absolutely the disease telling me that under certain circumstances, again, I can do something, or that I can control it this time. This time will be different. I guarantee you, I've read the promises. Control is not in there. Nowhere in the promises does it say I get to take control. It's just not there. Because a yellow light food is probably a trigger food for me. I have alcoholic foods. I have foods that have a chemical reaction in me, and I deviate my behavior from them. The other thing I try to really hard to be cognizant of and rigorously honest about is methadone foods. I call them methadone foods. That's definitely not an OA term. I have certain foods that I would consider methadone foods. You know, there are foods that are sugar-free. There are foods that you can get at the co-op, the natural foods co-op. There are things that you can get at health food stores that at times I might have eaten, but it's always turned out to be like an entry drug to other foods and other food behaviors. I have to give those things up without exception, because OA is a program of surrender. It is not a program of substitution. And my disease wants it to be a program of substitution. I want the easier, softer way to be in food, and it's not. The easier, softer way for me is in surrender. Surrendering certain foods, which I have found over time is not a sacrifice. It is the easier, softer way. And if you're struggling with something right now, you probably think I'm nuts, but I would much rather abstain from something completely than to try to eat it in moderation, because I don't know how to do moderation. I'm going to be insane, and anyone around me is going to be insane. And what I believe is that I've had my lifetime supply of certain foods. So if there's certain foods that I really want, first of all, they're not going to go extinct. I can have them tomorrow. I don't have to. No food in 31 years, by the way, has gone away. So I can always tell myself I can have it tomorrow. But when I'm really honest with myself, I just ate it all by the time I was 30. I just packed it in. I had my lifetime supply. I'm not deprived. I just really abused myself for a long time. And now I don't have to do that anymore. Now, I'll say that, and I'll still be rigorously honest with you. What comes up for me is that I get sad sometimes in social settings if I can't have some of the foods that other people are having, because I want to fit in. Fitting in is very big for me. I'm a wounded, fat kid, you know, who had compulsive overeating mom. And I was the fat kid not chosen, and I want to fit in. And if I can't fit in and be a part of, it's like, God, I don't drink, which is a choice by mine. I'm not an alcoholic, but if I don't drink, I don't eat meat other than fish. I don't eat flour. I don't eat sugar. And so then there's something even looks remotely gray. There's a part of me that goes, well, let's have that. And the truth is nobody's ever remembered what I ate later. They probably don't remember at the moment. But even if they do comment on, oh, you're not having any of that or have some of this, they're not remembering the next day. I haven't lost or made a relationship because of what I ate. And there are many, many, many foods that I have not eaten over the years, traveling or not traveling. And I don't regret a single one that I did not eat. There are times when I have eaten more food than I needed, or I tried something that I thought, you know, that probably wasn't the smartest thing in the world. But it wasn't, you know, it wasn't breaking my abstinence. So I just wanted to stress that. And also in the OA 12 and 12, on page 4 and 5, it talks a little bit about our disease. I just want to read a few sentences. Whatever the cause today, we are not like normal people when it comes to food and eating behaviors. Compulsive eaters often have abnormal reactions to food. Some of us overindulge and can't quit, and then we crave more. We must abstain, Wendy, from all foods and eating behaviors that cause us to eat compulsively. If we were to stop eating compulsively and stay stopped, we had to find a power stronger than ourselves for relief. And that, you know, gets into the whole spirituality side of the program. I do have a mental obsession that wants me to get ease and comfort from food. And then I have a physical allergy that if there's certain foods that I put in my body, I literally have a physical phenomena of craving and I can't stop. I have a spiritual hole, that's the truth, but I think I'm gonna fill it with food. So it's important for me to abstain. It's important for me not to overly focus on my weight. I am someone who does occasionally step on the scale because I'm pretty afraid that if I didn't, I'd weigh way more than I think. I need that reality check. But if I focus on my weight, I will lose my recovery. If I focus on my recovery in the 12 steps, I will lose the weight. And I'm going to officiate my niece's wedding in July. And it's really hard for me not to focus on my weight. It's like deja vu from when I was in my 20s, you know. What if I'm not thin enough to officiate her wedding? That's insane. And I don't want to go back out because I'm insane. So I need to stay off the focus on the weight and instead focus on the 12 steps of my recovery. And remember that I'm either moving closer to my higher power or I'm moving further away from my higher power. I'm either moving closer to that first compulsive bite or I'm moving further away from it. I need to be a seeker. I'm going to speak a little bit to spirituality because I got to sneak it in here. I need to be a seeker. I need to be God-centered because otherwise I'm going to be self-centered. And you guys are experiencing sunshine today. We're experiencing sunshine. In the break, I ran out and just soaked up some sun and ran back in. That's nature to me. And that nature to me is a higher power. I came in here atheist, so believe me, I had to find particularly nature in the beginning. And now my higher power is broader than that, but it wasn't in the beginning. And I have never felt worse looking at the ocean. I've never felt worse looking at trees. There's a spiritual connection there for me. And it helps me maintain abstinence. And again, abstinence works for me. Non-abstinence does not work for me. Why sometimes it is hard to get abstinent, it's not as hard to keep it, I don't think, as it is to get it. One of the reasons that I don't go back out is I'm scared to death I might not get it again because my disease has progressed these 31 years and I don't want to risk it. But I have an ego, which for me stands for edging God out. And my ego wants me to be in the struggle. The disease of overeaters, of compulsive overeating wants me to be in the struggle. So there's a part of me that thinks, oh, try this, try that. And if I pray for God to come between me and the food so that the food doesn't come between me and you, then I get to stay abstinent for another minute. I get to stay abstinent for another hour. I get to stay abstinent for another day because God is with me in this present moment and all is well in this moment. When I start thinking ahead to scary medical stuff in my family that's going on or other things, I mean, I'm edging God out and I'm trying to run the show one more time. And the final page of the text of the big book on page 164 talks about we're trudging the road of happy destiny. And I often hear it read at meetings that people say, trudging the road to happy destiny. That's not what it says. Go look at page 164. It says we are trudging the road of happy destiny. This is it. This is happy destiny. We're here, right? We're in grace right now in this moment. We are in happy destiny. And I always, always focus on that. I believe that a joyous long-term recovery is possible and that everyone can have it. It's an equal opportunity disease. It's an equal opportunity recovery. The 12 steps gives us a spiritual awakening, which does change us physically, spiritually, and emotionally. I'm a very different person today than I was when I first came into OA. And I'm going to share one story. And then I think I'm going to just drop a couple things in the chat and we'll open it up. When I was in my 20s before recovery, my father, who I adored, but also was kind of scared of, had to have open heart surgery. And that was a long time ago. Open heart surgery wasn't so common. And I had bronchitis. So I went to the doctor the day before his surgery and they made me weigh on the doctor's scale. I went to the town where he was having the surgery the next day. And then I came back the next day to see the doctor. I had gained 7 pounds in the day of my dad's surgery. 7 pounds in a day. And the way I did it was I hit the vending machines constantly. And I kept saying that I was nervous and had to go for a walk. So I would leave the waiting room that my brother and mom were in, and I would go down to the gift store. And I would grab as much food as I could, maybe a couple other things too, if I could think of something else to put in there, and then take it up to the clerk. And I can remember I went down one time in the afternoon and the clerk had changed in the gift store and I was ecstatic because this person didn't know how many times I've been there before. This was the best I could do without Overeaters Anonymous, 7 pounds in one day. Flash forward, I'm in my 40s, I'm abstinent. My dad has open heart surgery again in Santa Rosa, California. My brother doesn't come out for it. So it's just me and my mom, in a waiting room that I swear had two vending machines and one couch, and that was it. And you know what? God kept me abstinent. I was abstinent through my dad's second heart surgery. That's the difference between me with OA and me without OA. And I will also throw in that the love of my life, my best friend, my husband had a heart attack October 21st, and I was at the hospital with him for 2 days. That's way bigger than my dad, with all due respect to daddy. And I was abstinent. My sponsor called, texted me a couple of times, can I bring you food? Can I bring you food? I'm like, no, I'm good. I was abstinent for 2 days, living in a hospital while my husband was waiting to see whether or not he had to have open heart surgery. And thank God he didn't. He did have 3 stents put in, and our lives are forever altered. So that's what I wanted to share in terms of that. There is in, you know, it's a physical, spiritual, and emotional illness. There is Appendix A. There's in the book, Overeaters Anonymous, the foreword to the third edition talks about what we're talking about today. And then there's 4 appendices. And the first one is a plan of eating, so it's more applicable to the next segment. But Appendix B is the disease of the mind. And these are short. You can read these appendices in this book. They're pretty short. B is disease of the mind, C is disease of the body, and D is a disease of the spirit, all of which I have. So I'm going to drop some questions into the chat. That was 20 minutes, so that's good. You can talk about whatever you want. You can ask whatever questions you want. I thought it would be good to ask ourselves, is absence the most important thing in our life? And are you willing to go to any lengths to get it? Now, I give everybody credit who's here. Clearly, you're willing to go to any lengths because you're giving up sunshine and a special day in Alaska. So I dropped these in earlier, but I'm going to drop it in now, again, in the chat. There's 13 questions or so. These are OA approved, whether or not my absence is strong. You can look at those or answer, is absence the most important thing in your life, and are you willing to go to any length or talk about anything else you want? So I want to open it up, and then we'll talk more about food plan after we've had some time to share.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm a compulsive overeater.
Hey, Bonnie.
Hello. I am working on when I came in 2017, September, I got off blatant sugars. That was my hard thing. And I pretty much cut out the carbs also and lost 20 pounds and was so excited. And then kind of lost, you know, a little bit, and oh, I'll do the rationalization thing. And oh, I can have, I would just endure that sugar-free bellyache of chocolate. But, you know, I've pretty much decided I'm done with that. And so then I gained a bit back, and now I'm on my way back down, and I'm so excited and off of the blatant sugars, not deceiving myself with the sugar-free candy, and excited to have lost a few pounds in the last 3 months. And so it's very cool, but definitely can use all the knowledge and encouragement I can. So thank you for today. I'm not seeing in my chat where you have posted stuff, so I don't know if I'm doing something wrong because I am a newbie to the whole Zoom thing. Thank you.
Say, I don't want to crosstalk, but I absolutely think we are here to affirm each other and support each other. I also would encourage all of us, including me, to affirm myself. One of the things I love about the Region 1, I guess apparently now Region 3 also, Daily Journal in Overeaters Anonymous, is not only do I write down my food and whether or not I exercise and my gratitudes, but it says something I like about myself as well as something I need to keep in mind. So I often will go through my day at the end of the day and just think through things I did well, because before I came into recovery, I couldn't give me one. And now I can do a whole bunch of them. Okay, so here's the questions. Am I working the steps? Do I pray and meditate? Did I plan my food today? Am I maintaining and working towards a healthy body weight? Did I rely on my higher power to get or to stay abstinent? Do I ask for help? Do I make OA phone calls? Do I have an attitude of gratitude? Do I help others? Do I have an action plan to stay abstinent? Do I have a sponsor? Do I sponsor? Is what I'm currently doing working for me to remain abstinent? What activities will I not participate in to maintain my abstinence? And while you all are sharing, I'm going to try to come up with a way to drop that in the chat that works better.
Oops, it's Body. I had it muted. I'm one of the people that does not have it, but I did put in my email.
Thank you, Bonnie.
I am Leslie. I'm a food addict. And the question asked, did I ask for help? That I think is where I'm realizing that that is the basis of my problem. My program is like, I have to get out of myself, get out of isolation, ask for help about anything that I'm needing help with. Is it an issue at work? Is it an issue with my kids, my spouse? You know, it's like, I can't do this alone. And the more I ask for help, the more willing I am to ask for help. And I'm getting ready to share a church service tomorrow about my spiritual journey. And this 12 steps is a big part of my spiritual journey. It is my spiritual journey now. But so I'm gonna share vaguely about working the steps. I'm not going to divulge what group, what program I'm in. But I think that that's the biggest part, is like asking for help. And we call it God with skin on. When we come to meetings or talk to somebody, it's like, I need to reach out to my higher power, but I need something, you know, with skin. And so it's like breaking that isolation and working on that to handle whatever's happening in the day, and that this is a day by day reprieve from the disease, and I have to do stuff every day, have to do something every day to support my recovery. And so that asking for help is a big one for me. Thanks.
Thank you, Leslie. I dropped the 13 questions loosely into the chat. So
I can see it. I can see it. Thank you.
Thank you.
Yay.
I'm making a PDF. I don't know why I did that. It takes a village. Thank you for the feedback.
Oh, yeah.
Anybody else kind of struggling with their absence or wondering about absence or certain situations that are difficult to stay abstinent in that you'd like to hear somebody else's experience, strength, and hope? Or
I'm Wendy, grateful recovering food addict. Hi, everybody. I really just wanted to comment on a lot of what you said. It is so, so refreshing to me to hear the words black and white when it comes to my food plan. And I used to say years ago, the only thing that's black and white in my life is my food plan. And that using that food plan, staying abstinent, allows me to deal with everything else in life, which is not black and white. And drives me crazy because I can't control it. But over the years, it's become easier in the sense that I know what I'm going to eat. I don't have to debate. I don't have to think about it. I really like that the yellow list, I never had a yellow list. I never heard about that until recent years. And when I came in, it was pretty much abstinence was staying on your food plan. It was just, and that's still my definition. Abstinence is staying on my food plan. If I try and fit anything else into what that is, it's just too confusing for me. So I'm so grateful for my food plan. I'm in a weird place right now. over the years, I've had to, you know, as I've gotten older, I've had to have less and less foods. Since I've been down here, I've lost too much weight on a very healthy food plan. And we've added food to that, and I've still lost weight. And we can't decide if it's all my exercise that I'm getting now that I'm in Arizona. I do have a gastroenterologist that doesn't seem concerned about it. So we've added food, and sometimes my meals just feel too full. So working with my sponsor through all of this, we've had to work with five smaller meals a day. Little bit harder to think about, a little bit harder to plan for, and still sometimes I feel too full. So for the first time in my life, I'm uncomfortable physically with my food plan. And I don't like that at all. It shakes me up a little bit. I want to enjoy my food plan. I always have loved the food that I choose, and I still do, but there is something going on and I will keep pursuing it. But I remind myself that this is slippery and that I can say to myself, oh, okay, well, I'm kind of full, so I won't have that now, but then I'll have it later on, but then I won't. And then maybe I, you know, just that mind game thing. So even though I am on eating on a different schedule now, it has to be clear. It has to be a clear schedule of what I'm doing, and I have to be honest with my sponsor. So I never, ever, ever thought I'd find myself in the lowest weight I've been at in my life and trying to work my way back to a healthy one. And so, you know, that's life. Things change. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy. Thank you for sharing that perspective too. I think it's really important that this is an all-encompassing, embracing program, no matter where we're at, mm-hmm. with particular foods or our weight or whatever. So maybe we should talk a little bit about food plan or plan of eating. You know, we have the brochure on nine tools of recovery, and it says in there that some plan is necessary. And I believe that's really true too, because if I don't know what my food plan is, I don't know if I'm abstinent or not. So we're going to talk about plan of eating, but I also want to remind myself, as when I say that often, so I don't sound like I'm, you know, lecturing, because I don't want to lecture, and I need to hear anything that I say, I need to hear more than you do. It's an important tool. It's one of at least 33 tools, depending on how you define the tools. We got 12 steps, we got 12 traditions, and we got 8 other tools, right? So that's 33 tools. So it's a very important tool, but I can't have that be my whole recovery, because that's gonna turn into me acting on my disease as opposed to being abstinent. So the foreword to this book, Overeaters Anonymous, it talks about a plan of eating, and so does Appendix A, which is the role of a plan of eating in recovery. So I really recommend that. You know, the details of my plan of eating might kill somebody else. Your plan of eating might not be good for me. So it gets to be really individual, depending on what I did to myself beforehand, before what all of us did to ourselves before we came in here. And it's really important to me that my plan of eating be worked through with a sponsor. I need a second pair of eyes. I need somebody who helps me. And it talks about in our literature that a plan of eating is what we eat, when we eat, where we eat, how we eat, and why we eat. So I looked at that for myself really quickly in my head before today. And you know, what I eat is I eat healthy foods that are nutritious and medicinal for my body. Before I came into Overeaters Anonymous, I thought food was recreation. It was all about recreation. And then I came in for a while and I found out, oh, it's nutrition, which didn't sound very glamorous. And now I believe it's medicine. I believe everything I put in my body either fuels it and helps it and nourishes it, or it could be detrimental, where there's a chemical or, you know, something else. So what I eat tends to be all healthy foods, you know, fish, lentils, beans, fruits, vegetables. And there's a whole lot of stuff that I don't eat on my food plan too. When I eat, for me personally, I eat 3 meals a day, nothing in between, no matter what. Even when I travel internationally, even when I'm in different time zones, because that's one of my bottom lines. And if I break it, I don't know that I would ever recover. With God's help, I know that I can. The literature promises me that, but I don't want to find out. Some people will say that their meals have to be a certain number of hours apart, or they'll actually have in their food plan that they don't eat in the middle of the night, or they don't eat while they're cooking, they don't eat while they're standing, they don't eat while they're in the car. So there's lots of ways you can define when you eat, that you only eat certain places, certain ways. Where you eat, you know, do you eat it only at a table? Do you weigh and measure? I'm sorry, do you eat at a table, or do you eat when you're in a moving vehicle, which is where I did a lot of my compulsive overeating? I actually had a spoon in my car because there's only so much you can get out of a particular carton without actual silverware. How we eat, are we sitting? Do we pray first? God, I admire those people that pray before every meal. I really try to say a quick prayer, but I can't tell you that I've been doing that for 31 years. Do you weigh and measure your food? You know, what are the commitments? For me, one of the things that I've noticed I'm bad at, I'm not a TV watcher, but I still work and I can be really connected to my computer, and I can sit here in front of my computer more mindlessly than is good for me. So I really need to not eat in front of my computer. I will tell you sometimes that I do because I'm trying to catch up at work. It's not smart. It's not healthy. I pray for the willingness to not eat in front of a computer. And then why am I eating? Again, am I eating because it's nutritious and it's mealtime and I need to feel my body, or am I eating to take the edge off? What, when, where, how, why? For me, I've been writing my food down every day for 31 years. I do it now in that journal. I've always done it. I know many people, including my sponsor, who commits her food every morning and an email to her sponsor. And then at the end of the day, if she's deviated, tells her sponsor. That hasn't been my story. But I do write it down, and that does keep me rigorously honest. Another thing I started doing at the beginning of COVID, I was talking at a meeting and I said that I was struggling a little bit with my meal size, and I wanted to know if anyone would allow me to text them. So for at least a year now, I've been texting a woman with my food when my meal was over for dinner. When my dinner's over, I text her, my dinner's over, thank you for allowing me to do that, whatever. I have never once eaten another bite after I tell someone my meal's over. You know, Richie Kay, who was around a lot in the early years, used to say, put down the fork. And I don't have to debate whether or not I'm going to have an extra half apple because I've already texted my dinner's over. And that's the kind of stuff I want to eat, by the way. I just want to eat healthy foods. But volume is a thing for me, or can be. So that's why I commit. And as I mentioned earlier, my food plan can change and has over time. It's gotten much, much narrower in my food, while my life and my horizon's gotten much, much bigger. But I can't do that in the middle of a meal or spontaneously just because I see something and I go, oh, I should put that in my meal. And I'm going to share a story about a friend of mine in Northern California. I met her at a retreat that I led. She had 25 years of abstinence. We've reconnected in this, through COVID, and she's from, you know, another part of the universe you wouldn't know, and she would be okay with me telling you this story. In the 5 or 6 years that I didn't see her, she turned 75, went to Europe with her husband, and had 25 years of abstinence. And she was in Europe, and she thought, I'm 75 years old. I've been absent 25 years. I can have that little X. And she was out for a year and a half. She now has 4.5 years of absence. That scares me because she had more recovery than me. I'm grateful for people who have the courage to share that stuff because it keeps me in a healthy amount of food. I literally am grateful for people who share that stuff. I don't know, as I said earlier, that I would make it back in. I know that I could because the literature promises me that, but I don't want to risk it. So there's tons of food I haven't eaten over the years. I don't even remember what it was. But over the time, at the time, I thought I was sacrificing by not eating it. And I'm really, really grateful that that's not the case. Because not only is my dis-ease of compulsive overeating physically, spiritually, and emotional, it's permanent, it's progressive, and it's fatal. I have watched people die of anorexia in this program, one of bulimia in this program, and compulsive overeating in this program. And I don't want to be one of those people. I'll share a few things and I want to ask you a question. We can open up and talk about plan of eating. One of the things that helps me a lot is I have to define what my meal is going to be before I eat it. I have to know what my last bite is going to be before I take my first bite. I cannot decide what my meal is going to be mid. I don't get to open the refrigerator and go, oh, what do we have? And just start eating. I have to know what my last bite is going to be. Otherwise, I might not stop. Years ago, I heard a woman from Ireland in OA say, and this made me feel so good because she had more time than me, that sometimes when she opens the refrigerator and her normie husband, which I have one of those, has foods there that maybe she shouldn't be eating, she puts those foods in a brown paper bag so she doesn't have to see them because they're not her food. I love that. I haven't done it in a while, but I there was a while when I did. My husband would bring a particular fruit home that I really liked, and I'd open the fridge and realize, oh, we've got apples. I didn't know we had apples. And I'd think, oh, I should add that to my meal, but it wasn't part of the plan. So brown paper bags work. There's events that I don't go to or events that I eat before or after at because my absence is the most important thing in my life. I am not willing to go to an event and eat on somebody else's food as opposed to what I know works for me. Another thing that's worked really well, particularly in the early years, is if I wasn't sure whether or not I should give up a food or not, which probably means I wasn't willing to, I would give it up for 30 days. 30 days. With the promise to myself that I could take it back on day 31 if I wanted. You know what? The physical craving's gone once I get it out of my system for a week or two. I don't want to take it back. So if you can just commit between now and the time your head hits the pillow tonight, a food that you're going to give up, that's great. And the other thing, again, I think I mentioned it earlier, but in this time that I've been absent, no food has become extinct. Manufacturers have come up with all kinds of weird combinations of food flavors that thank God I don't get to try because I would, but nothing has become extinct. So if there's something I feel like I really, really want, it's gonna be there tomorrow. And then I'm just gonna tell a quick story about being willing to go to any length and we'll open it up. My sponsor told me when this happened that I should share it. I've never shared it. But I'm a scuba diver. And when you scuba dive, you go out really early in the morning on a boat. I don't know. Is anybody else here a diver? That's because you all live in that cold water. So when you dive, you go out like at 5-6 o'clock in the morning. You go on the boat for like an hour. You do a dive. You come up. They have food there on the boat. It's mainly flowers, things that I don't eat, and a few veggies. And then you go and you do a second dive because you have to wait for the oxygen, nitrogen levels to balance out in your body. And then you come out of the boat and you eat again. So most people eat like three times by the time they're done diving, which is noon. They eat before they leave. They eat between the two dives and they eat right afterwards. I have a routine. I've been doing it for 20 years. I don't eat beforehand. I eat between the two dives, one meal, and then I don't eat again until after I'm off the boat. 2 years ago, I'm in Hawaii. As we're getting on the boat in the morning, several people had dove with this dive shop before, and they were just, oh my God, I can't wait for the vegetables. Oh, I can't wait for the vegetables after the dive. Those are just the best vegetables. And I'm thinking, ooh, great vegetables. I think I'm salivating. I don't realize it, but I think I was salivating for vegetables. So we come up from the first dive. I eat my food that I always bring on my own. And then we come up from the second dive, and they had the vegetables out, and they were potato chips. Which is not a break of my abstinence, but it's something I don't need and don't normally eat. And my compulsive eating over, you know, mine decided that I needed some potato chips. So I ate some potato chips. And then at one point I said in my head to God, God, I'm done. And then we got off the boat, you know, whatever it was after the, we get off the boat and I went to eat at a health food restaurant in Maui with my husband. So I'd eaten three times. I'd eaten the food I brought between the two dives. I ate the potato chips after the dive, but I was pretty sure that was still breakfast because it was really part of the dive boat food that I'd eaten earlier. And then I ate, unfortunately, really early, like at 12:30, I ate my lunch. And I was playing around with it in my head, trying to justify potato chips, which again, aren't a great food choice for me in the first place, but not a break in my absence. And I knew really early on that day, you know what? You've just had your three meals. You had your three meals. Those potato chips, that was lunch. And dinner was what you ate at 12:30 at the health restaurant, the vegan restaurant. And I tell that story because my sponsor thinks that's a great story of being willing to go to any lengths and commitment to abstinence. To me, the fact that I ate potato chips fairly spontaneously, doesn't really sound like a lot of recovery to me, but it does show that for me, 3 meals a day, nothing in between, I stuck to it. I made a poor decision on food choice, but I did not eat a fourth meal that day. And frankly, no matter how I want to redefine it in my head, it would have been a fourth meal. I don't know if that makes any sense or not, but I am willing to go to any lengths today, just for today, to stay on my food plan and to be abstinent. So you can share whatever you want, but if you're still eating a food that you're trying to get away with, if you're still looking for that fast weight loss gimmick, if there's a yellow light food that you really need to surrender because you don't feel good about yourself the next day after you eat it, then I would encourage you to share that in this next time period. And then we'll wrap up talking about hope. So the floor is open for anybody who wants to. You can just go ahead and speak up.
Hi, this is Bonnie, compulsive eater. And yes, I have yellow foods. And there's more than one that I should give up. Occasionally I have wheat. And a wheat food that's really dangerous, and I don't think I've had in a while, is wheat pasta. And I'm not eating bread, but wheat can get in there for sure. So that's one. And black and white foods, I'm sure not there yet, but I love hearing people talk about that. And I love these questions. I wrote them down as I listened. And thank you.
Thank you, Bonnie. And in the chat, not in a PDF, are both the 13 questions on abstinence and just some OA resources, pamphlets, and books that are specific to a plan of eating and abstinence. And they're all great.
They're all in the chat?
Yes, everything is in the chat now.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Can't get it, and I'll get it to you privately, but everything should be in the chat now. So questions on plan of eating versus abstinence, things you're struggling with, things you just want to commit to this group right now today, that you're going to give it up for the day or the hour or whatever you need to do? Or do you want to move on and talk about hope?
In the books, the role of a plan of eating in recovery from compulsive eating, is that a pamphlet?
That's in the book, Overeaters Anonymous, the third edition.
Oh, okay.
There's four appendices.
Okay.
The first one is the role of a plan of eating and recovery from compulsive overeating. And it's only like four pages, but it's okay. In the brown book of Overeaters Anonymous.
Okay, thank you.
You're welcome. Okay, so I'm gonna go ahead and talk a little bit about hope, because then we can open up to anything you want and you guys get to decide when you wanna wrap up the meeting. I just feel really badly that you're missing sunshine. yes, Wendy.
I just wanted to share a couple behaviors that I'm not willing to give up yet, but should. And one is eating in the car. I often try and squeeze my lunch into doing other things instead of just sitting down and eating it and enjoying it. Another behavior I have is sitting in front of the TV at night with my dinner. So, both of those are not what I would call 100% perfect recovery. And they are what I do. And maybe just talking about it will bring it to the light. and I will be able to give them up at some time. I don't know. Thanks.
Thank you, Beth. Thank you, Wendy. Thank you for taking that risk. Okay, let's talk a little bit about hope. Why should we have any hope? We have this fatal disease. I believe that the disease's number one tool is hopelessness. The number one tool is hopelessness. And I felt hopeless when I came in here. And today I expect a miracle. Because you're all miracles. I've seen miracles. I expect a lot of miracles. And I still get more miracles than I ever could have imagined. You know, and it says in the OA literature, can we guarantee you this recovery? The answer. And then it tells us what to do. There's a guarantee. That's amazing to me that there's a guarantee. And then, and there's a, it's in a plan of eating, the pamphlet on page 9 says, relapse is not inevitable. And I think it's really important that we share that in a way, because sometimes I hear, well, relapse is inevitable. No, it's not. The literature says it's not. And if people have relapsed because we have this cunning, powerful, and baffling disease, I have nothing but compassion and love for them. And I would, just like I think everybody in a way, would do anything to help them come out of relapse. I believe that that literature also, it says, perhaps not literally, but implied, no further relapse is necessary. Another relapse is not necessary. It's, you know, we are guaranteed this recovery. And because of that, I live a life today beyond my wildest dreams. I say that, originally that was Roseanne who said that, but it's true for me, it's literal. I don't want anybody else's life. I don't want anybody else's body. How amazing is that for a fat kid from the Midwest with low self-esteem, who grew up without a lot of friends and a family that didn't know how to affirm, I want my life. And that's because I have a lot of faith in the program, and the results of these steps have come as a, you know, from working the program. I was in an open AA meeting last night in Michigan, and I heard someone define faith in a way I hadn't heard before. They said, faith is feeling as if there's hope. Feeling as if there's hope is faith. And I like that. I hadn't heard that acronym before. I have so much grace, higher power, higher spirit, big love, whatever we want to call it. You know, there's a divine hand that intercedes all the time when I need it. And a lot of what I have, it isn't deserved. And deserved is important. How I grew up in Michigan, in the Midwest. You had to earn everything. You had to deserve it. It had to be a reward. And what OA has taught me is I don't have to deserve it. It just comes. That's what grace is. You don't earn grace. It's my birthright. It's my unconditional love from a higher power. And, you know, my hope is that I woke up abstinent today. I love being abstinent today. It is beyond my wildest dreams. And if I can wake up abstinent today, then I have hope that I can wake up tomorrow abstinent. And when I came in here in August of 1989, if you'd asked me what my dreams were, I wanted to weigh under 150 pounds so I never tripped that scale at the doctor's office, you know, that where they have to bring in the big number, the big weight. You know, I weigh in my 120s today. I had two relationships before, I know this is recorded, but I had two relationships with married men who were not quite divorced before I came into recovery, because I didn't know you could say no to someone if they were interested in you, and they were not age appropriate. Today, I'm in a 30-year relationship with the love of my life, a man who is age appropriate, who'd never been married before, therefore he was single when I met him. And I'm so forever grateful to my marriage to Tom. I was clean with my parents when they died. I had no unresolved issues. Right now, I can't think of anyone that I have any unresolved issues with. That's incredibly hopeful. That's a life beyond my wildest dreams. I'm traveling with my brother and sister-in-law. We go on a trip every year, or unless there's COVID, every couple of years. I got asked to officiate my niece's wedding in Michigan. Somehow a 28-year-old who grew up in a different state from me and wasn't around me all the time came to me with her fiance and said, we want you to officiate our wedding because you're a big part of who I am today and all your love and all your support. That's Overeaters Anonymous. At 194 pounds, nobody wanted me to officiate anything. They just wanted me to get the hell away from me because I was angry and unpleasant. So I have hope because things like that keep happening. I just have so much hope. And my life is truly beyond my wildest dreams. I couldn't have planned those things. I couldn't have planned before that I would be here in Southeast Alaska with you on Zoom again. What a treat. After 3 years, I get to see everybody again. That is so huge. And that's just hopeful because I don't know what's going to come up next. It just, the dream just keeps getting better. That is a really a literal thing for me. That is not something that I just throw out. So I'm going to share one story and then we'll open it up to talk about what's going to come out of the story. So in 1993, I jogged the California National Marathon. And in the training for that, we were told a story, which is true, which is that before, I used to know the year, I think it was 1958. I'm not sure, I'd have to look it up. But no one had ever broken the 4 minute mile. Nobody. It was impossible. There were 50 individual medical books in different parts of the globe that said it is impossible for the human lung and the human heart capacity to break the 4 minute mile. And then a gentleman from England named Roger Bannister broke the 4 minute mile. And in less than a year, there was almost 100 people throughout the globe that broke the 4 minute mile because they knew it was possible. Because they had hope. And that's what Overeaters Anonymous and the 12 steps of my higher power give me. You all have shown me that it's possible and that I have hope. So my question to you would be, what messages are you repeatedly telling yourself that keep you stuck in hopelessness, whether it's with a tiny behavior or whether or not it's with the big issue of abstinence or with anything else that you're facing in your life? What are you telling yourself that's keeping you stuck in hopelessness? And that, my loving friends, is all I got. Thank you.
Thank you, Wendy.
Hi, I'm Bonnie. I'm a compulsive overeater. Thank you, Wendy. And I love that there is the recovery possibility because I see others in recovery. Being able to say no to the things that are detrimental to my body. I have in previous times and lately also tried to have the mindset that sugar is poison, and that helps me to go, you don't need that, Bonnie, you don't need that. And so that has been very helpful. And I too feel like the hopelessness helps me with hope that I've been in a place that wasn't so good and now I'm in a better place, and that's excellent. So I appreciate the encouragement today. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Bonnie, for being here and for sharing. So vulnerable. Mm-hmm. Thank you. For anybody that hasn't had a chance to talk today, I mean, there's a few people who I don't think have spoken at all. Would you like to share?
Hi, this is Mary, recovering food addict. I think I shared a little bit of this a few weeks ago, but I started to work on just the idea of resistance, and for whatever it was for, resistance in my addiction, other things in my life, and every meditation, morning and evening, I would just work on resistance and trying to release it. And in that time, I ended up having a pretty intense spiritual experience and connecting with oneness in a way that happened to me before. And so it was kind of a breakthrough. And so I really appreciated being able to focus on that and stay steady with that and know that that was the right thing for me to do. And and I think it can apply to a lot of other things, places where I'm stuck or have resistance. And I love that question. What are you telling yourself that's keeping you stuck? And I think that's a good place to focus. So thank you.
Thank you, Mary, so much. Thank you for being here and for your vulnerability, your recovery.
Hi, it's Bonnie, compulsive eater.
Hey, Bonnie.
All of the above. Yes, you've been inspiring and you've given me hope. And it's what I just heard, the word resistance. That's why I haven't been black and white. That's why I haven't given, let go of yellow foods resistance. And I don't know why it just popped up, Catholic schools and having to write something 100 times on the blackboard. I will not be resistant. I will not be resistant. I just thought of that. hope. In a spiritual exercise I did, hope came up. hope. I've never had other than the person speaking and me in a corner on my iPhone, but I have four of you. I have Mary and Bonnie, and Wendy and me. I don't know why. It's one of those little mysteries of technology, but it's nice to see you. Is it only the four of us now?
No, there are 9 beautiful souls on this meeting.
Okay. And I don't know why. I don't have all 9 beautiful souls. One of those other souls share so I can see your lovely face.
Thank you so much for being part of today and for your vulnerability and sharing. And Wanda, I don't want to put you on the spot. I don't want to put anyone on the spot, but I don't think you've had a chance to share.
Okay, hi. Wanda, grateful recovering compulsive overeater. Sorry, I was very, very late. I was traveling and got home and a friend said, it's still going on. So I hopped on. I'm sorry I didn't hear the rest of your story or the rest of the workshop, but I feel like the price of admission was the new acronym for faith. I have a list of acronyms I absolutely love and program. And so that the feeling that as if there's hope, and that's what OA keeps giving me, is the hope to, you know, show up imperfectly, even late, and get something from my higher power through a fellow sufferer or fellow person, traveler. And I just love it. And thanks, Wendy, for this. And thanks, everyone else, for being here. I just can't do this program alone. Love you guys.
Thank you so much, Wanda, for joining us and for being vulnerable with us today. So glad you're here. Okay, this is your meeting, you guys. Do you want to keep sharing? Yes, Wendy.
Let me ask, does anyone else want to share? Leslie from Ketchikan, Leslie from Juneau, Cassie. No? Okay, because I know I've shared 2 or 3 times.
Well, then I would like to express incredible gratitude. I have never been in service in any form that I didn't get more out of it than anybody else who was involved in the service. And this has been so helpful to my recovery, particularly because I came in before there was a plan of eating, to do the reading and spend some time reminding myself of things that maybe that I did know, maybe some learning some things that I didn't know in preparation for today. And it has fed my soul to see all of you again. So I want to thank you very, very much, Karen, for asking me, and Leslie for being the tech person, and Wendy H for being the original Wendy H. Yes, ma'am. I saw you raise your hand.
Yes, I want to get this out in fresh air, on the table, whatever you want to say. Hopelessness. I used to feel a lot of hopelessness about the disease, especially with chronic relapsing. I don't feel that way anymore. However, hopelessness is a default emotion for me, going back to young age and trauma survivor and sexual abuse survivor and on and on and on. And I've been working with it spiritually, but I always identified with Eeyore in Winnie and the Pooh. And today I feel hopelessness about finding an answer for my intestinal issues. And I'm feeling some hopelessness about my husband's issues with memory and shaking hands. And so I really have to stay, well, I don't really have to do anything, but I need God and I need support, because hopelessness is a negative sort of cesspool that draws me down and takes everything with it. Takes any joy in the moment, takes my, I'm not even thinking about today, I'm thinking about the future, and it's never good. It's never good. It's always a really depressive future. So I was kind of blown away when you mentioned hopelessness. That's something I would like to give to God. And I love that faith is feeling as if there is hope. So thank you for that.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Wendy.
Thank you for your courage. Now, my sponsor often says to me, I mean, she doesn't even have to say it anymore. She's just in my head. God dang it, she's just in my head. She would say to me today, Wendy, just do Saturday. Just do Saturday. Because my hopelessness is in my husband's health issues or whatever. And the truth is, in this day, right now, we're great. Life is good. God is present. God can't be in the future and in the past, which is where I would prefer to be for reasons of insanity. So my sponsor would definitely say, Wendy, just do Saturday. Last call. Anybody else want to share anything at all? It's a safe space.
Hi, everybody. I'm Cass, my compulsive eater.
Hi, Cass.
I want to thank everybody for being here today and everybody sharing. Wendy, thank you for sharing all the experience, strength, and hope that you did. I really love hearing everything people have to say about so many different things. And like, I really need so much help in putting things together and just things and ways that you ate before and the way that you were, whatever you call your things that changed in your life and how you are now. And just all the different things that people talk about. This the technology has been amazing. I have so appreciated, really, what I've appreciated about this last year is being able to go to workshops, conventions, all kinds of things like that. You know, via Zoom, I have really learned a lot and you know, find tools and stuff to change and go forward. I do really love what keeps you stuck in hopelessness. That is like, I would think the opposite way to think about it, but it really isn't, because it's, well, looking at, you know, ferreting something out, digging something out, what's going on, what is it that keeps you with not go into that happy, joyous, and free place. And I think that's that I really realized about myself. You know, it's like, so many little things really keep me stuck. And so, I don't know, it just was really, everybody's share was really nice day, good day, lots of good stuff. And I just really appreciate everybody who's here. And again, you know, a big thank you to you, Wendy, for sharing all your experience to help with us and spending some time with us here today.
Thank you, Cassie. Thank you so much for sharing with us and for being here today. This really has been a gift to me. It's my privilege to be here. Anybody else? While we're in this safe circle, want to share anything else? Well, I want to get out to the sunshine, I'm thinking. I can have it again tomorrow. You guys can't be guaranteed the sunshine, so we should probably get you out of here. It's 12:45. You probably want to get out. How would you, Leslie, I don't know if you have a way that you wanted to close out the workshop with, you know, the OA promise or with a prayer, or was that predetermined how we would close out today? Anybody have a preference?
I really like the third step prayer. That's just me.
Okay, well, I'm going to ask if everybody would unmute if they're comfortable with it. And we do the third step prayer together. God.
I offer myself to thee, to build me and to do with me as thou wilt. Take away my difficulties, that victory over them, and bear witness to those I would help. Of thy power, thy love, thy way of life. I do thy will always.
Okay, remember,
keep coming back. You. Love everybody.
Thanks, everyone. Love you guys.
You're all here into your food plan in this moment. Go forth and play.
Thank you.
Love you guys.
Thank you. Thank you.
Thank you. Love you.
Good to see everybody. And thank you to Leslie, Cassie, and Karen.
Thank you. Right on.